British native Neil Entwistle thought he hit the jackpot when he met bright, bubbly American exchange student Rachel Sousa during his junior year of college. The couple falls deeply in love and marry, completing their circle of happiness less than 2 years later when they welcome baby girl Lillian Rose. Except Rachel has no idea that her loving husband is actually living a sordid secret life, and she'll find out too late just how deadly those secrets are. Hello and welcome to The Dark Side of Love. I'm your host, Bianca Sloan, author of suspense novels about the dark side of love, and this week I'm putting a spotlight on the case I'm calling Heart of Darkness. Born on September 18, 1978, UK native Neil Entwistle hailed from Nottinghamshire, considered a ceremonial county in the East Midlands of England. The oldest son of Clifford, who was a coal miner and later a district councillor, and school cook Yvonne. Neil and his younger brother Russell were raised in the hardscrabble market town of Worksop, which borders Sherwood Forest, where they had a very working class, far from posh upbringing. So as I've learned, in England there is a great divide between the South and the North, not unlike the US, but the difference here, that the schism between the two regions has more to do with wealth, the haves and the have-nots. So those who live in the North are considered more working class, more blue collar, while Southerners are viewed as more upscale, wealthy, or posh. Tall, dark-haired Neil yearned to break free from his working class Northern roots, and after attending school at Valley Comprehensive in Worksop, he went on to the University of York to study electronic engineering with business management. Brian Rossiter, who was head teacher at Valley Comprehensive, told People magazine that Neil was, quote, gifted academically and socially, the ideal student. And it was during his time at the University of York that Neil met a vivacious American by the name of Rachel Sousa. Born on December 14, 1978, in Weymouth, Massachusetts, to Priscilla and Paul Sousa, Rachel was a little girl when her father died, and eventually her mother remarried to a man by the name of Joseph Matarazzo, which gave Rachel and older brother Jerome four step-siblings, Joseph, Michael, Mary Beth, and Erica. Pretty and petite with thick brown hair, Rachel attended Silver Lake Regional High School, where she made her mark as a peer counselor, tutor, and mediator, as well as a volunteer for various community events. As her principal, Richard Kelly, told the Milford Daily News, quote, "She was a great kid, a real nice girl. She was a good student, very involved. She was someone who contributed to the school community." Rachel had an interest in politics and history, harboring dreams of becoming a judge one day. At the urging of her AP U.S. history teacher, Rachel applied to the College of Holy Cross. And it was during Rachel's junior year at Holy Cross that she studied abroad at the University of York, meeting Neil through the school's rowing team. Rachel was the coxswain for the team, which basically meant sitting at the head of the boat and bossing the boys around. Hashtag, I love it. And Neil was one of the rowers, so again, that's how they met. And the name of the boathouse for the team was called, appropriately enough, Love Lane. One of the members of the rowing team mused to the Nottingham Post that, quote, "Neil always seemed quite quiet and was not a regular going out sort of person. Rachel was something of a novelty, being American. She was very bubbly, outgoing, very positive, and was well-liked by the men's squad." As Donovan Slack, a reporter for the Boston Globe, told Dateline about Rachel, quote, "She had a sparkle in her eyes that made just everyone she met fall in love with her." And so, it wasn't long before the Brit and the American were rowing their own love boat. As Rachel's friend and fellow study abroad student Carolyn Eisen told Dateline, she liked Neil for Rachel, saying, quote, "I would see him like opening the door for her, and he was very polite. I think he always called when he said he would call her, you know, the things that you're hoping to find when you're meeting a new guy." And he adored her. Benjamin Pryor, a friend of the couple from York, was quoted in the Nottingham Post saying, quote, "They seemed a really loving couple. They were very comfortable in each other's company and good fun to be around." Rachel returned to the States for her senior year at Holy Cross, and despite the ocean between them, Rachel and Neil made the relationship stick, And after graduating in 2001, Rachel hopped back across the pond to reunite with her beau, eventually landing a job teaching English and drama at St. Augustine's High School in Redditch, while Neil joined IBM and later Kinetic, a defense technology and security firm in Malvern, Worcestershire. And the icing on the cake? Rachel and Neil got engaged, and no one seemed more in love than the groom-to-be. In June of 2003, just prior to their August wedding, Neil posted on Friends United, which is a social media network that was out of the UK, saying, quote, "Getting married to the most amazing woman in the world this summer, Rachel. We met through rowing. Living south of the Birmingham border is my only complaint in life." Rachel and Neil got married in Plymouth, Massachusetts, with a wedding reception in the UK in November of that same year. While the couple started their married life in the UK, moving to rural Worcestershire in the West Midlands of England after the wedding, Neil was growing increasingly dissatisfied with life in jolly old England, complaining to friends that his working-class Northern England roots, specifically his Cockney accent, was keeping him down and thus preventing him from making real money. Neil was convinced that the only way he was going to get ahead was to get out of the UK and into the booming IT industry in the States. The Daily Mail noted that Rachel was, quote, ecstatic over the prospect of returning home where all of her family was. But first, there was the matter of the couple welcoming their daughter, Lillian Rose, on April 9, 2005, less than 2 years after they married. After Lillian's birth, it was time to finally jump back across the pond as the Entwistle family moved to Carver, Massachusetts, in September of 2005, to live with Rachel's mother and stepfather before they rented a luxurious four-bedroom colonial in Hopkinton, about an hour away, moving in right after the holidays in early January 2006. Fun fact, Hopkinton is the official starting line for the Boston Marathon. The price for entry into this upscale neighborhood was steep. Rachel and Neil rented this 2,400-square-foot beauty in the exclusive Cubs Path cul-de-sac for $2,700 a month. Add in the new furniture they bought and the white BMW SUV that Neil leased for $400 a month, and the money was going out pretty fast. However, Neil is counting on notching a six-figure job in the IT industry, so what was there to worry about? A lot, as it turns out. Because that hoped-for six-figure salary in IT never materialized for Neil in the lethargic job market of 2006, and as a result, he had run up all kinds of debt in an attempt to keep the family, as well as appearances, afloat. And Neil tried a lot of things to try and rack up cash. He sold computer products through eBay, but then he stiffed his buyers, and it turns out that he would go on to create six different eBay accounts in his name, which... fraud. Neil further dipped his toe into e-commerce by launching something called millionmaker.co.uk, which guaranteed customers a profit of $6,000 a month within the first 6 months. So some kind of a pyramid scheme, apparently. And then there was srpublications.co.uk, which sold a manual that promised men the secret to enlarging their robots. No, really. He was calling this book or whatever the Big Penis Manual. Unbelievably, men were not lining up in droves for that one, and in fact, not a single one of these ventures opened the spigot of cash that Neil was hoping for. And it turns out, Neil wasn't just using his computer to look for jobs, defraud eBay customers, and offer men tips on how to get bigger rowboats. He was spending quite a bit of time trying to get his freak on, however he could get it. Before Rachel and Neil moved to the States in the summer of 2005, Neil posted a profile on a swingers website in search of a, quote, discreet relationship, musing that he was curious to see whether or not American women were, quote, better in bed. And because all women of all nationalities love when men do this, he also posted a picture of himself naked, on a lounge chair. Hashtag don't do this. And once the family moved to Massachusetts, Hunting for prostitutes and escorts in the Boston area was as regular an occurrence as job searching. Websites with names like adultfriendfinder.com, halfpriceescorts.com, escorts.naughtynightlife.com, and hotlocalescorts.com clogged his search history. Now, I am all for getting jiggy with it, but this behavior, it's hashtag too much. Because after all, Neil is a married man and the father of a newborn. The last thing that he should be doing is chasing after prostitutes and posting nude pictures of himself on the internet. January 21st, 2006. Rachel and Neil have been living in the house on Cubs Path for about 10 days, occasionally inviting friends and family over for informal get-togethers in order to show off the house. Rachel's mom, Priscilla, and a friend have come by for one of those get-togethers, but the house is quiet. The white BMW is gone. Priscilla and the friend left, but something felt off. Priscilla had, in fact, been trying to reach her daughter all day, and as it turns out, Neil and Rachel had already missed dinner plans with Joanna Gately and her sister Maureen, which was not like Neil or Rachel. All of it was enough for Priscilla to reach out to police and ask them to conduct a wellness check. Police searched the house, including the master bedroom, but didn't find anything suspicious. Middlesex County District Attorney Martha Coakley was quoted in People magazine as saying about the master bedroom, quote, "The bed was in disarray, with several layers of thick bedding and pillows. However, it only appeared to police that the bed had not been made that day." Rachel's family spent the next day, January 22nd, searching for some sign of the Entwistle family, but no dice. Joanna and her sister Maureen, they were so worried that something had happened that they actually camped out in the driveway of the Entwistle home, waiting for Rachel and Neil to return. And when they still hadn't turned up in the morning, the sisters got the neighbors to give them the code for the garage, and they went inside the house. They found partially eaten plates of food in the kitchen, a bathtub filled with water for bathing the baby. In Lillian's room, the nursery, classical music was playing. The sisters called Rachel's mother and stepfather, and the foursome decided to file a missing persons report. The cops came back for a second search, this time coming in through the basement, and there's a smell that they had not noticed on their previous visit. They follow that odor up two levels to the master bedroom, and it is only then that they peel back the pile of blankets from the four-poster bed. Dressed in their pajamas are Rachel and baby Lillian. Rachel's arm is draped over Lillian, her feet curled into her body. They're both dead. Rachel Entwistle was 27 years old. Her daughter, Lillian Rose, was 9 months old. Initially, police thought carbon monoxide was the culprit. However, a closer look revealed a bullet wound in Rachel's head and one in Lillian's stomach. That bullet passed through the baby and lodged in Rachel's breast. The obvious question now is, where is Neil? There is no forced entry into the house and nothing was missing. And again, the car is gone. Police launch a search for him, eventually finding his white BMW at Logan Airport, and a search of his financials reveal that he fled town on January 21st, purchasing a one-way ticket back to England. Initially, when he arrived back in the UK, he drove around aimlessly, notching 800 miles on his rental car. He tried to withdraw money from an ATM in Manchester that night before checking into a hotel and heading to his parents' house the following morning. And that's where cops find him when they call him on January 23rd. As reported in the Nottingham Post, according to the recorded call, State Police Homicide Detective Bob Manning said to Neil, quote, "I'm calling you because we have some bad news about your wife and your daughter. We responded to the house and they are deceased. Did you know that?" Neil says, quote, "I did." He claims that he found Rachel and Lillian's bodies, and instead of calling 911, he decided he was going to join them in death, saying, quote, I pulled the covers over them, and the only thing I could think of was the knives we had got downstairs. I pulled the big one out and held it towards my chest. I think it was just the thought of how much it was going to hurt. I just couldn't do it. Neil also admitted during the call, quote, I haven't even cried yet. You haven't cried? Detective Manning asked. And Neil said, quote, no, not properly. So instead of calling 911, Neil says he panicked, yet he had the presence of mind to buy a plane ticket and get on a plane to go to a whole other country. Sounds like he was thinking pretty clearly to me. So while Neil is playing poor, pitiful me across the pond, cops are piecing together exactly who Neil is. They learn he's over $30,000 in credit card debt, and that in addition to trolling sex sites, in the days leading up to the murders, he was Googling things like cheap flights, knife in neck kill, and how to kill with a knife. Pretty hard to explain that away. Hashtag premeditation. And as if all of that wasn't damning enough, Neil's DNA was found on the handle of his father-in-law's .22 caliber handgun, which is the same caliber used in Rachel and Lillian's murders. Neil's explanation for that was that about a month prior, he had joined his father-in-law at his shooting club for some shooting practice. Sure. Except. Rachel's DNA was found on the gun's muzzle, and the keys to his in-law's house was found, the keys were found in the BMW that Neil had left at the airport. The theory is that Neil stole the keys to the house, drove over there while his in-laws were at work, took the gun, went home, murdered his wife and daughter, then drove back to the in-laws' house to return the gun before he hopped on a plane to England. Cops speculate that the motive for the killings was financial, even though there weren't any insurance policies out on Rachel, so he wasn't going to benefit from killing her. Like, there wasn't going to be some million-dollar windfall if she died. He didn't have any girlfriends, though it wasn't for lack of trying. So he wasn't trying to wipe out his family to be with someone else, like a Chris Watts situation. I wonder if Rachel maybe found out something, either about the debt or the sex sites or both, and confronted him. And he just snapped, because now he's about to be exposed. He'd spent a good amount of time trying to portray this perfect, upwardly mobile life to the outside world and to his wife even, and now everyone is going to see that he's a fraud. And he can't let that happen. So, my two cents, for what they're worth. Neil was arrested on February 9, 2006, having filled his days before his arrest with visits to the movie theater to watch Jim Carrey movies, dining out with old rowing friends from York University, and hatching schemes to try and sell his story to the highest bidder. Having outlined his plans in a notebook about how he planned to pimp out the exclusive rights for his side of the story. Nobody bit. Neil was extradited back to the States on February 15th, and after being denied bail, he was indicted on March 28th of two counts of first-degree murder, illegal possession of a firearm, and illegal possession of ammunition. He entered a plea of not guilty 2 weeks later. Neil's trial began on June 2nd, 2008, over 2 years after the murders, and he's got a whopper of a defense. His attorney declared that it wasn't Neil who committed these heinous murders, but rather that Rachel had killed Lillian before turning the gun on herself, chalking it up to extreme depression. And all a horrified and heartbroken Neil was trying to do was protect the honor of his late wife's name and reputation by covering up the crime, literally pulling the covers up over the bodies, and running. It's ludicrous, of course, and nobody believes for a second that this is what happened. Neil was found guilty by the Middlesex Superior Court jury that heard his case, and Judge Diane Kottmeyer handed down a sentence of mandatory life in prison, no possibility of parole. Neil appealed his conviction in 2012, but was denied, so he will live the rest of his life in prison. He is currently serving his sentence at Old Colony Correctional Center in Bridgewater, which is a medium security facility. Rachel and Lillian were laid to rest together on February 1st, 2006. Now, I know I said nobody believed Neil's defense that he was trying to protect his wife's reputation, because his parents actually believe him, which, you know, it's their kid, so that it's not a stretch to think that they would do that. But they continue to this day to proclaim their son's innocence, saying that the media circus surrounding the case and that evidence of gunshot residue found on Rachel's hands that was never properly presented to the medical examiner meant that their son never got a fair trial. Rachel's mother, Priscilla, hit back at this appalling defense, telling the judge in the case, quote, "Our dreams as a parent and grandparent have been shattered by the shameful and selfish acts of one person, Neil Entwistle. For him to try to hide behind an accusation of murder slash suicide of this beautiful woman and perfect mother is low and despicable. Joe and I, Rachel's family and friends, were sentenced without the luxury of a trial by jury and now must go on with an eternity of emptiness. Suffering does not begin to describe what we have endured." Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of The Dark Side of Love. I'm your host, Bianca Sloan, and show your love for The Dark Side of Love by visiting thedarksideoflove.com for show notes and transcripts. While you're there, sign up for my newsletter to be notified about new episodes, and you can also find a link to my Patreon page where you can access the bonus material and other fun stuff. Learn more about my suspense novels about The Dark Side of Love by visiting biancasloan.com. Thanks for hanging out with me, and join me next time for another tale of love gone wrong. I'll see you on the dark side.